power of our diplomacy. Diplomacy.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really big deal.
The strength of our diplomacy.
Oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
One. Deadline.
Hello, Diplomacy Cast listeners. Welcome to episode 17 of Diplomacy Cast.
Really, 17?
Yeah.
So we're almost legal?
We're barely illegal in this episode.
I feel good. I like it.
Diplomacy Cast is a podcast about the board game Diplomacy. I'm Eric Mead. That's Nathan Barnes.
Still am.
In today's episode, we have made a radical change to our lineup.
I'm actually not a fan. Of this change. We're going to do it, but I'm skeptical.
All right, it's not really a radical change at all. What's happened is that Matt Shields is in town, and so he's joining us in studio. And actually, it's two radical changes.
Yeah, we're in a different studio.
We're in a different studio. It's Nathan's apartment, which is bigger.
Luxurious Diplomacy Cast.
Yeah, yes. We've hit the money now. Yeah, we have a table.
We're rolling in the condo is what's happening right now. It's also, it probably sounds like we're rolling in the toilet because of this radical
the stall.
Change.
We're in the stall.
Yeah, because of this radical change, we're using the other setting on the microphone that makes it so that Matt can join us. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, guys.
Thanks for joining us on our show.
Yeah.
We'll see how this goes. Our producer probably already hates us, which is fine.
It's actually par for the course, I think.
Yeah, it's true. So, from the toilet, that is Diplomacy Cast, episode 17, we're going to talk today about scoring systems.
Scoring systems.
And we've been promising this, get you ready for Worlds. Exactly. Talk about how they're going to score that thing, because y'all want to win it, right?
Yeah, of course they want to win it.
Yeah.
Well, and we're not going to get too much into online scoring systems, honestly, because I think it's not in our area of expertise, and we're going to get some guests on to really expand on that.
We can talk about how they were 9 years ago, if that's of any interest to anyone.
And really, we already vetoed that.
Yeah. So, if you have any questions, if you have any feedback, press at diplomacycast.com.
And, you know, Eric would like it if you subscribed to us on iTunes.
I would love it. I would treasure that moment.
He gets a special email with a heart on it.
With a what?
A heart on it.
Oh, a heart on it. Yes, that is what we get.
Exactly.
Also, we have a Facebook of some sort.
Yep.
Good talk.
Power plays.
So we're not going to do any other segments today or anything. There was the emailing, guys. Pick it up.
Yeah, actually, send us some emails. And I know that it's terrible that we take so long to get back to, but
it was a sad crop this week, you guys.
It was.
Yeah, this month.
So just, we do eventually get back to them. Just don't, make them broader questions. Make fun of us. We love that.
Yeah.
I'm a super big fan of that.
We're going to be plugging some East Coast tournament stuff on the website pretty soon, so check that out.
The whole Grand Prix is in full swing now. So, it's going to be Grand Prix, full swing. What are you talking about? San Francisco's done. We're coming up to June. We're halfway through the year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're just too good for that for almost winning it a couple of times?
It
was the almost winningest horse in a Kentucky Derby. Yeah, it's great.
Yes. I'll have another. Should we get into it, guys?
Yeah, I think we should.
So, all right, let's do it. All right, scoring systems. Where should we start?
So what I thought we should do is let's get a landscape for our listeners. Let's kind of get some broad categories and then bucket the various systems that we know about or have known about into those broad buckets, and then maybe a little bit later how to play them.
You're the guys with all the pieces of paper in front of you. I'm just the host. It's fine. Go ahead, bucket away or whatever.
And next week someone will email us and explain why all this was completely wrong.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to that.
Totally miscategorized.
Yeah. Welcome to having a podcast. Yes.
Well done.
So I think we were discussing earlier, and you can try and distance yourself from this, Eric, but I think we all agreed that there are three broad categories. There are draw based systems.
Yeah.
There are lead-based systems, and then there are center-based systems. And I and I think we should just kind of go from there and just start with the draw-based, or as Matt insists on calling them, kill-based systems.
Yeah, I think I mean misrepresented there. I think that was somebody else.
So basically, I mean, it bears stating that tournaments have to come up with a way of evaluating, like, there's not enough solos in the world, and there's not much in the rules about what you do if there's not a solo. I mean, I guess there's just that one little bit where he says, well, if nobody can solo, then you call it a draw. And
yeah,
that's all he says. And which sort of implies that the people that are dead aren't in the draw.
Right.
But other than that, he doesn't say very much about what the next best result for a game is. And the problem is we have tournaments of this game and we need some second way of doing it.
Well, but to be clear, though, it's not just that we need it. It's that people want or expect it. Like, there's certainly been, there's been proposals on the table like, we only score solos, and if there are no solos, nobody wins. Unfortunately, you know, if you're putting together a tournament and you have people flying in from all around the country, they'd like to see some awards.
I mean, yeah, I think
it's a competitive thing.
And if
we could talk
to people, get one solo each, it's a tie, and then you need some kind of tiebreaker.
I think that's more like the Platonic form of a scoring system,
right? Exactly.
Like, yeah,
it's like
some kind of Moletsky-esque.
It's a philosophical exercise that what if we had a tournament scoring system like this?
And I think it just wouldn't be satisfying. Mm-hmm. People would like, you know, whatever it is, however much. And I think I think this is worth stating, but is almost so obvious not to say. But yeah. I mean, no one likes a score. I mean, I've never been to a tournament where people are like, wow, I really enjoyed the scoring
system. What a great scoring system.
I mean, I really think it was fair. And I think I was treated, I was represented, my play was represented 100% correctly with it. I mean, and that's the thing, like, they're inherently flawed.
Yeah.
Well, nobody really likes the idea of, you know, spending 8 hours playing a board game, and at the end of the day, having that reduced to a two-digit number.
Right.
It's like, congratulations, the last 8 hours of your life are worth 39.
Yeah, you poured your heart and your soul into that 9-center Austria, and you're just like, wait a minute, Matt had a 10-center Austria on that other board?
Son of a...
Yeah.
Exactly. So we have these systems, and there's been, you know, collectively, we've been playing this game for a really long time. We've seen a lot of systems.
Yeah.
So, back in... I'm going to say our day, at least in Matt's day. What was really Matt is a little more senior than us.
Wow.
He has a giant gray beard. He looks like Santa Claus.
He does not have a giant gray beard. There's a lot of people in diplomacy that have giant gray beards. That's really not fair to Matt.
I like the idea of small, jelly old
vaguely salted.
No, okay,
beard.
Okay. No. Seriously, back in our day, when Old Man Winter was playing, there was a lot of draw-based systems. They involved trying to whittle down the players into a draw. So a two-way draw, a solo was worth X, a two-way draw was worth Y, and then descending order, and there was an arbitrary number that sort of like declined in what we thought that was worth.
And there was even some discussion on what the X and the Y ought to be there. Mm-hmm. Like, should a solo be 100 and a two-way be 50 and a three-way be 33, you know? So it's just like a division, or should you at least say, you know, hey, a solo is worth 500 and a two-way is worth 100, and and then down for the. I mean,
there was a lot of. There was definitely a lot of.
But I think the more classic draw-based systems were always, you know, a solo is worth X and a two-way is half of X, and a third of X.
I mean, showing up in a tournament and getting three three-ways was exactly as good as a solo in two eliminations.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the classic system, even though rarely was that literally the system. But that's kind of the.
The
theoretical system,
yeah.
And that was something you saw online a lot.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's how it was when I was playing, like, on the judges and stuff. It was basically, it came down to that. Yeah,
yeah. Because that was exactly what it was, yeah.
And so you had, so what that reduces it down to, and I think this is why Matt has referred to them as kill-based systems, is you wanted to whittle them down, and that generally involved, like, eliminating people.
Yeah.
Because back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, there was no such thing. I mean, I don't remember playing tournaments back then that were dais. Draws include all survivors. They were just, you had to actually eliminate people in order to call the draw.
So that is dais. You mean you don't remember ones that were no dais?
Maybe that's what it is.
I
don't remember that having to be this thing.
In the email world, it was usually kind of a game-by-game, tournament-by-tournament setting where you could do it either way. Although, honestly,
the judges were usually dais, and which was silly because then, like, the people who were the least interested in playing because they were just waiting around for you to take their last center were the people that, like, the game continuing, it depended on that guy, like, actually, like, getting orders in or whatever. And so that was kind of a problem. And then for tournaments that were trying to do that system, I think, like, the first innovation was, well, nobody really likes when their death is inevitable to have to play for another hour and a half. Right. Right,
and you know, just avoided people walking away.
Right.
Well, it also just means you can leave sooner. A lot of times you look at the board and there's three guys who are at 10 and one guy who's at 4, and you're saying, "Well, we're going to kill this guy. You know, it'll take us an hour and a half to do it, or we can all go to the bar now."
Yeah,
and that's a powerful motivation for someone to vote themselves out of a draw.
We can all go have a good time now.
So then the next thing was a draw based system where people could voluntarily just vote for an ending of the game that doesn't include them in the draw. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is, I don't know if that's too much of a mouthful or if that's pretty self-explanatory, but, I mean, the dais, or no dais, just meant you could finish the game anytime you wanted to with any draw proposal that you wanted to. So if it's down to four people and three of them have 10 and one of them have 4 and the three are England, Germany, and Turkey, and the one who has the 4 is Italy, they could just say, "I propose an England-Germany-Turkey draw," and Italy could vote for that if he wanted to. And that means that meant different things in different tournaments, but that basically meant, all right, fine, I'm out of this one.
I'm going to wave the white flag. Let's be done with this.
Really hungry flag.
Yeah.
I don't want to be here anymore flag.
Which created, and we'll talk about this later, a whole dynamic of, like, let's demoralize someone to the point.
Talk him into voting himself out.
And we'll talk about that later, I think, but we won't spend too much time on it because as far as I know, there are very few draw-based systems left right now. In the last decade or so, we kind of went from a no dais system into into some of these other categories,
whole other types of
I think what you mean to say is we sort of shifted from a system where most tournaments had some kind of a draw-based system to today.
Not so much.
Relatively few of them do. There are still some. And really, by most, what we mean is most tournaments in the United States.
It's only the United States.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever the case that Europe was playing much draw-based scoring.
I guess maybe it's worth spending 30 seconds on the idea of voting yourself out, but you still get survival points that actually did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we'll get back to that.
All right.
How to play. Because there is, I think the only one is DixieCon right now. Is the only one that's still a draw base.
Yeah, it's part of my memory of how tournaments work. Yeah. It's the survival points thing.
No,
we'll get
get there.
So
we'll talk about playing these systems in a second.
Do you want to get into examples of what some of these are? Come back.
I think just briefly, we'll talk about playing them. The only draw based system I think we know about is DixieCon, still in existence. Right. Mm-hmm. Somebody might adopt it, but they're not in vogue right now. I'm sure it'll come back again.
Sure.
You never know. And then lead based systems are what is a little bit more...
Sort of replacing.
It's replacing a little bit, and it's definitely European. It's the C Diplo systems out there. So I always get this wrong, so I don't want to try and describe the system. I'm going to leave this to Matt. So a lead-based system means...
A lead-based system basically means that far and away, the major thing that you care about in the game is, are you the guy in first place, or are you the guy in second place? Centers may be important, there might be a component of it where you care how many dots you have, but being in first is by far the more important thing.
And more the better. In first by 5 is a lot better than in first by 2.
That's a little bit of a different concept.
Okay.
That's a little bit of a different concept. Okay. I mean, CDFO is kind of the classic lead-based system, and I think the major component there is that you would by far rather top a board at, say, 8 centers than be in second place at 15 centers. I mean, there's no circumstance under which coming in second to somebody else is going to be better than having won the board would be.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and in most systems, it's actually mathematically impossible. Sometimes there might be systems where on the margins, okay, a really awesome second place might be a really crappy first place, but even that's pretty rare. Usually it's you've got to top the board
okay
to get full credit.
So that's Sea Depot, which is primarily your European tournaments.
Yes.
And that's the third side.
Sea Depot is like that. There have been some systems in the United States that are like that, the Carnage system that was run for a while. Yeah. Although, ironically, I'm not sure that Carnage actually uses the Carnage system anymore, but...
Well, I don't know, like, whack, we ran a lead-based system back in the day. Like, 6 years ago, ran a lead-based system. Well, that was Manix's system, Jake's system, which was a bigger.
Right.
And maybe it's sort of hard to talk about lead-based systems without talking about center-based systems.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, because intuitively, I think when you first try to break them out, people say, well, that's the same thing, because what you care about is how many dots do you have.
Yeah, the center-based system is like the opposite of the draw-based system, how many people are on the board when the game ends is totally irrelevant to you. The only thing that's irrelevant, the only thing that is relevant to you is how many dots you got.
Sure. Right? I mean, certainly draw-based systems are more different from the other two than the other two are different from each other. I mean, to me, the main difference between a lead-based system and a center-based system is that in a center-based system, you can still have a very solid result that even though you didn't top the board.
Yeah.
And you can get a result on your board by coming in second that's better than the result somebody else might have got on their board by coming in first.
And again, we're talking about the European type systems here, right?
I mean, really we're kind of generalizing because in the real world when you actually walk into a tournament and you pick up the piece of paper that says this is what the scoring system is, or you're playing an online tournament and they've listed the scoring system, it's rare that you come across a scoring system that is really purely one of these three things.
Right.
I mean, most draw-based systems have some center-based component. Most center-based systems provide some bonus points for being in first place. Mm-hmm. Right. So the real question is, what is the predominant feature of the system?
Yeah.
Because that's what may cause you to sort of reevaluate your strategy at certain key points in the game.
Okay. So in a lot of ways, a lead-based system is sort of a variant of a center-based system. I would say, I mean, like, it's hard to have a lead-based system that isn't a center-based system at one level.
Well,
We're just saying that a lead-based system, its primary, its definitive characteristic is entirely focused on
What's the difference between the two? Like, just give me a practical example of, one of each that actually gets used in the real world, because I feel like we're sort of, like, stuck on this. What's the difference between lead-based and center-based?
Sure. We've mentioned Sea Diplo, which is one of the main lead-based systems. Basically, the way that center works, the way that system worked was a lot of systems kind of prorate their score to 100 points, which is actually a convenient thing so you can compare different systems. In that system, you would get, 1 point for each supply center, which is lovely, so there's 34 points being divvied up based on that. And I think everyone got most of the time, and I should say there's a couple subtle variations on this, so you might find, the one you're playing under isn't exactly like this.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you also get 1 point just for playing. But most of the points would come as an award for coming in first, second, or third. The guy who comes in first got a 38-point bonus.
Okay.
The guy who came in second got a 14-point bonus. The guy who came in third got a 7-point bonus.
So first place would be 38 plus his centers?
Correct.
Okay. And so, which is something that second place couldn't possibly hope to match.
Right, yeah.
No
yeah,
what.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing. I mean,
38 is more than...
Right, the worst you can possibly get for coming in first is, probably in the mid to low 40s.
Okay.
It's as bad as you can possibly do. The best you can possibly hope for by coming in second would be, 16 plus 4, would be, 30 points.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's a significant difference. You can't really beat that by coming in second.
Yeah.
Whereas, because remember, what you're really doing, you're not comparing yourself so much to the guy on your board, because... the guy
comparing yourself to the tournament.
You're comparing yourself to the guy across the room on the other board.
Yeah.
Because the guy who beat you on your board, is going to have a higher score than you, no matter what.
Right.
So that's lead base. And when you go to center base system.
Center base would be something more like what your guest a few shows ago, Melissa, was talking about, like Detour, which, again, there's 100 different versions of. But sort of classic Detour systems would be something like, you get 1 point for every supply center, and the guy who's winning gets an extra 2 points. Which, as you can see, an extra 2 points is a far cry from an extra 30-plus points.
Okay, so that's an extreme example of that. Yeah, right.
And some of the later versions of it, they refined it a little bit, and maybe the bonus was a little bit higher for different numbers. But basically, it was going to be something like that, where you get a few extra points for coming in first, maybe a few extra points for coming in second, but it was a much, much smaller number of points compared to what you're getting for your dots, which means if you get to a point where you have to choose, path A versus path B,
you would, you know, in Detour, you'd want to pick the path that gives you more
dots.
Whereas under a C diplo system, you might say be more inclined to stab your ally because what you really care about is topping the board.
Yeah. Whereas in the other system, like if you happen to finish 13-12 in a game long alliance and you're the 12. Sure.
That's pretty darn good. Yeah, that might be fine.
There are scenarios in which, so those are broad categories.
Right.
So then where does this sum of squares thing fall in on that?
The one, and sum of squares is what we're playing in Worlds, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sum of squares is, in my opinion, it's more of a center-based system, although I do have to concede it's a little bit of a hybrid of the two. The name comes from, and it's often just called squares, which is short for sum of squares. The name comes from the math that's involved, which is more than most people actually want to get into, but just briefly.
But this whole show is more than most people want to get into, so we're just doing that today. That's fine.
We've been doing that for a year now.
Sorry. This whole show is more than most people want to get into.
Yeah.
They're already addicted. It's okay.
You're totally listening, just in case. Just in case we say something awesome about Austria you hadn't thought of before. Which we might.
Stay tuned for the next segment.
The short explanation of some of squares basically is that at the end of the game, you know, you play however long you play, you stop playing whenever everyone is sick of playing, and then you look at everyone's supply center camp. You take the number of centers everybody has at the end of the game, and you square them. So if you have 8 centers, you square it, and that's worth 64.
If you have
3 centers, you square it, and it's worth 9. And then, once you've done that, you do what I referred to a minute ago, which is basically prorate everybody's scores onto a 100-point scale.
Yeah.
So the math comes out to, square your supply centers and divide it by the total of everyone else's squared supply centers and your own, and and you'll come up with
throw it all into a bucket and then
but really all you're doing is prorating everybody's scores to a 100-point scale. So if you end the game with 15 centers, 50, I should have picked a number I can actually do in my head. 15 squared is what?
How about
225? 10. I can do that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you end the game with 10 centers, that's 100. If you end the game with 5 centers, that's 25.
Yeah.
You can see pretty clearly right there. You might in some tournaments, you'd look at the guy who has 10, you'd look at the guy who has 5, and you'd say, oh, well, the guy who has 10 got twice as many points as 5.
He didn't. He did a lot.
10 is twice as many.
Yeah.
In this system, 100 is 4 times more points than 25 is.
Mm-hmm.
So the difference between 10 and 5, it's not that you've doubled your score, you've quadrupled your score.
Mm-hmm.
In that kind of a system, it's a center-based system, but as you sort of climb the ladder and get bigger and bigger and bigger, the difference has become more and more extreme. Going from 9 to 10 is good. Going from 14 to 15 is better.
Right.
Than going from 9 to 10 was.
And going from 14 to 15 is better, especially if the next guy only has 9 or something.
Yeah,
right?
Sure. And as far as the sort of system on the board goes, that's another interesting feature about the squares system, is that in addition to wanting to have a big supply center count, so that when you square it, it's a big number. The other thing you want is for everyone else on the board to have a small number of centers.
Right.
Because I'd much rather that you're, scoring that 5 center power than scoring a 9 center power.
Right.
That's very, very different. And so you can improve your number of points simply by shifting around the centers you don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're going to end the game at 12, and maybe that's kind of locked in. But if you can get the guy who's at 10 to go down to 8, by giving those 2 centers to some third party, that actually could improve your score significantly.
That's why we call it the bigger-er system.
Like, right.
You just want to be, you don't just want to be bigger, you want to be bigger-er
sure.
than the other people. So
is that a satisfactory explanation?
So yeah. I think we've done a good job of hopefully we've done a decent job for our listeners to sort of break these out into different categories and then focus a little bit on some of squares. And so let's go into another segment and really talk about applying these.
Yeah, parties. See, this is the part I'm interested in.
Yeah,
how it actually changes people's play.
Math is hard.
Yeah,
yeah.
Math is hard.
I'm exhausted right now. So I guess I'll just go ahead and be the draw-based guy for purposes of having the next part of this conversation.
Sure.
But I'm used to it, and I feel like when I'm at a tournament that's draw-based, I kind of know what I'm supposed to do. When I'm at a tournament that's center-based or lead-based or something, I kind of have to think about it for a little while. And sometimes in the heat of a game, I'm just like, wait a minute, what's good here? Oh. But my point is that anytime I'm at a regular old draw-based thing, that's, like, such a high percentage of the tournaments I've ever played in my life that, like, I feel like that, like, I instinctively know what I'm supposed to do in those situations. And what we're trying to do in this segment is just go, all right, if you're at these different types of tournaments, how does it change your game?
Right.
And it should.
It absolutely should. But yeah. When you walk in the door, you know, your TD, your tournament director, is probably going to, you know, shout some things at you. And one of them will be, if you want to learn about the scoring system, here's a piece of paper on it. Mm-hmm. You know, he or she's not going to shove it down your throat, but you have the option to go and look at that and take a minute and go and look up. There's a lot of little interesting things and little tweaks that to any of these broad categories that we've talked about that can really change the way things. So, like we mentioned earlier, dice draws include all survivors. Like that, whether or not that is a component of ending a game. It's an important component. It can entirely change how you play around.
As just an aside note, in reality, it's unbelievable how few people actually do pick up those things and read them because,
absolutely.
I think that it's almost appropriate for diplomacy that people are much more interested in sort of chatting their friends up before a tournament. I don't have time to read this thing. I want to know what Nathan's been up to since the last time I saw him in a tournament because that would be the diplomacy way.
Exactly.
It's actually alarming the number of tournaments I've been at where somebody starts calling for a draw and trying to exclude somebody from the draw and only then learn that, oh no, you can't do that.
It doesn't
or vice versa, or ask, can I put myself out? I don't know.
And as a quick initial caveat, you know, in a lot of ways that's fine. There's a philosophy in which I just play the game and I want to play the scoring system, and that's great. Mm-hmm. But you do want to know at least the basic ground rules. Like, if there are some important things, like if you can call a draw that includes all survivors or not, that's something you didn't know. There's another one that was popular a couple years ago is, what was it, the 29 center rule?
It was more than a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a while ago now? Sorry, I'm old. I'm so old. There was it was a rule that I think, you played this rule, right?
It was like a draw-based system, but even worse than a draw-based system. Yeah. It was, I think, inserted for speed originally, but the idea was that each dot you had was basically one vote. And if 29 dots worth of votes agreed on any outcome for a game, that game was over. So in other words, if you wanted a three-way draw and the three people that wanted the three-way draw added together had 29 votes and they all agreed on that, some poor dude with five was out. There was nothing he could do. It didn't matter. What are you talking about? I'm sitting on Munich and Kiel, and you totally can't ever take me away. And he's just out.
So supposedly there was a very famous board that one of your former guests, David Hood, was on, where at some point in the middle of 1901, the other six players said, hey, you want to call a six-way draw?
Without David Hood. That's the bar.
I don't know if that's true. I've heard that story more than once. So
that's dirty in a way that makes me want to, like, just shed a clown tear down my face.
At least call David Hood and laugh at him.
No, I wouldn't laugh at him. I'd be like, you're a hero. Yeah. Are you kidding? Six people drove to a tournament, sat around a table, set
and
it
voted
up,
you
talked for really maybe an hour, and then we're like, hey, that guy's intimidating, let's end the game now, we're literally better off.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Better off not playing that.
I actually remember a board at DixieCon when they were using that, or maybe it was at Tempest when they were using that rule where David Hood 29 centered me. I was so sure that I was, like, in this game, and David Hood was just like, there's 29 centers of us that don't think that you are. And I was like, oh, sad.
So read that sheet.
Anyway.
And here's a couple other things. Like, WAC runs a top board. You want to know
if there's a top board.
If there's a top board.
Yeah.
Few tournaments do it now. It used to be very in vogue, but WAC still does it. A couple of other tournaments are bringing it back. I believe World is going to have a top board.
Fascinating.
It's going to be really good. That's going to change your dynamic. And also, and I'll let Matt talk about this, who's really, look at the number of rounds that actually count.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We'll circle back on that part.
I know, but still, you want to make
this matters
sure
a ton.
Well, you know, if there's five rounds,
right? Yeah, I mean, both things. One, how many total rounds are being played, and two, how many of those rounds actually count for your score, which are two different dynamics, both of which are very important.
And, so you got all those. You just like read the rules and then figure some of these things out, because
my aside ended up in as a major conversation, which is fine. But so just going back to how we had this thing, like, so draw based, how does that change your game?
So
if you know you're playing in a tournament that's primarily going to be judged by how small your draw is,
exactly. So when you sit down at the table,
yeah.
And this is, I think, one of the major critiques of the system is that you immediately are going to go to people that are tried and true, people that you know, people that you have initial interactions with that you're comfortable with, so that you can get the smallest cohesive group you can, and you start talking in 01 or 02, especially if you're an experienced player, about what kind of three-way draw is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's the goal. Yeah. You want to, like, start a tribe, you know? It's like, we are the village.
No, you're absolutely
right. You've got this. We're going to do it. And you just sort of try and fiat it, right? You're just trying to, like, make it happen just by force
and will. And you could be selling five different plans to five different people.
Absolutely.
You know, you could just be saying, it's you, me, and Matt, Nathan. Come on, it's you, me, and Matt. And then I leave, and I'm like, Matt, it's you, me, and David Hood. It's you, me, and David Hood until the end of the game. But you're trying, you know, and you're trying to figure out what sticks.
But it's still, I mean, it's a system that really, really encourages long-term alliances.
Yes.
More than most systems do. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are, you'll still see stabs, and you'll still see people going for solos, but there are some real sort of countervailing tendencies that you have to think about, like, when you get to that point where it's like, God, I could go for a solo here, but there's a real downside to trying it. And so...
And
the downside is that you end up in a bigger draw because everybody organizes to stop you.
And this is, I think, a very good critique of the system. You were playing the tournament, in a much bigger way than you are in other tournaments. Because if it's a you know, you only have five or six boards at the tournament, or even especially if you have three boards. But if you have five or six boards at the tournament, the likeliness that you're going to have to work with these people again is really high.
True.
And so you're really concerned about making sure within that tournament that those people are going to like you if you're doing well.
Right.
If you're not doing well, it doesn't matter. But if you can make that tribe thing happen, you want to. You're very near the end. You don't want a solo.
Couple of things on that.
That I'm going to come back to. That statement I'm going to come back to. But
go for it.
Okay.
There's on that point, and this may be the same point you're about to make, people are also in a draw-based system more aware of the size of the draws that look like they're going to happen on other boards.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, the thing about most tournaments, and like, again, it's been a few years, but I mean, there used to be one here in Seattle every year that was almost a pure draw-based system.
Absolutely.
The other factors, there were some minor tiebreaker things, but I mean, it was basically a pure draw-based system.
Yeah.
Most games end in three-way draws.
Yeah.
I mean, that's far and away the predominant ending to a game is a three-way draw. There'll be some significant number of four-way draws because basically, you know, the two of us are on one side, the two of you are on another side, and nobody can ever bring themselves to stab their ally and whittle them out, so you'll get some four-way draws. But... you know, five-way draws don't happen. Two-way draws are just extremely hard because you actually got to get to 17-17.
Yeah.
And this is one of those cases where whether you can vote people out of the draw becomes really, really important.
Mm-hmm.
Because
two-ways tend to happen when people despair and decide that they're about to be a victim of a two-way and they don't want to play it out.
But if you know going in that it's not even possible to vote this guy out of the draw, it's illegal, we're not allowed to vote this guy out of the draw, then I look at this and I say, God, there's no way Nathan and I are going to get 17-17. Somebody's going to stab. So I don't even try.
Yeah.
And so, you know, three-way draws are by far and away the most common result.
Particularly on the Friday night round.
And the reason, but here's the thing. The reason that's important is that if you're not playing that many games, right? You're playing three or four rounds.
Mm-hmm.
If you could have gotten a three-way draw and you screw something up and it becomes a four or a five-way draw, That's a major hit that you just took. That's really hard to overcome, and it can be impossible to overcome because there's going to be people who got a three-way draw every round.
Yeah.
There's going to be guys who got three-way draw.
I know those people. Right. In those early days, I got a lot of, like, fourth, thirds, and seconds at tournaments just by, like, not getting eliminated.
Exactly. And so that's the thing. I mean, if I go for a solo, if I say, hey, you know, I'm getting big, I'm going to stab some people, I try for the solo, oh, crap, they stopped me at 17... There's five or six of us left. I am a little bit hosed.
Yeah.
How do I make that up?
Yeah.
You know, because you know, just simply getting a 15 center three way the next three rounds and isn't going to get it done.
And I guess my other point that I wanted to make that's sort of related to that is that, like, I can remember reading a lot of stuff that was sort of driven by the fact that those online games that I played were usually draw based, where they sort of had formalized, like, the logic of it, where what would happen, like, what you would expect to happen on a board if you're doing things right is that, like, there would be one early game elimination in each theater. In other words, west and east. You know, like, two of them would take out one in the west, three of them would take out one in the east. Those would be the first two eliminations. And then there would be another, another two, I guess I should say.
Another pair,
so that would take your five-way down to a three-way.
Right.
And then at that point, somebody should try and go for a solo. When that happens. And if you screw it up, if you're not sort of obeying that internal logic of how you take out two and then you take out two, that's when you get punished with like a four-way draw or something. But if you do it right, then maybe you get to solo.
But the problem with that is that I think a lot of people, once you got to where, if you've got seven good players who are all sort of understand this, they don't let it get to that point. I mean, by the time you get it down to three players, none of those three people are in a position to solo. Because I don't wait to eliminate players four and five before I say, hey, I need to make sure Eric doesn't solo.
Definitely. Right. Or, on the other way, hey, I'd probably better stab Eric now because this is my good chance to solo right here when there's still five people on the board.
And so then it becomes a little bit circular where I should stab, but you know I should stab, so anyway.
Yeah. So, and this is, and I think a lot of these things that we've brought up are why draw-based systems are a little bit out of fashion right now. I think for the reasons you've mentioned. One, it tends to be the people get into this internal logic, and you tend to get into this sort of like flow.
You're kind of playing for a three-way.
You're always trying. You know, we're always kind of doing the same thing. And one, that didn't keep people coming to tournaments. Mm-hmm. And two, it ultimately wasn't satisfying. Mm-hmm. And it felt, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Like it really stifles a lot of creative play. So, and I think that might have been part of it, and I think the kill based aspect of it also might have been another reason.
Yeah, we got to take this guy out. He's stealing some of our points.
Yeah, basically. You know, there's this sort of like we want to have this guy in it, maybe for whatever reason we have, but we feel compelled by the system to put a bullet in him.
Wait. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and this is a little shifting gears just a little bit, but I don't know if either of you ever played tournaments online.
I did.
Back in, say in like the 90s, there were a lot of email tournaments, and there was a...
Old Man Winter?
Sure, yeah. I would say it's true.
When I was in high school, you mean?
Back in the 90s? No, sorry, it just amuses me.
I love that Nathan's like 3 years younger. You by the way, all
right. I was in high school in 1991, I guess.
I like pretending that I'm really like, I like pretending I'm like 24.
You look
like
a snapper in your short pants.
Anyways, so before there was... You know, the sort of
the internet-based
graphical. Before there was the internet. That sadly is true. Most of the play was by email, and far and away the dominant sort of philosophical approach to the game was this draw-based system. I don't exactly know. I mean, there's sort of a chicken and the egg thing. I'm not exactly sure where that came from, but there was a very popular rating system that was run. That was called the JDPR. Player Rings.
We talked about that a little bit on the show. It was like the good version of what we wish would happen in face-to-face play. Like
sort of, but that was pure 100% draw-based scoring.
Yeah.
There was nothing else going on. The only thing, you know, a solo is worth X, a two-way is worth half of X, a three-way is worth a third of X. And he ran tournaments. And the guy, this guy named Doug Massey from Vermont, who set it up, he ran tournaments running this exact system. One thing that I do think, sort of looking back on this, and I... have no explanation for this, but I did feel like there were more solos in that draw-based system than you see at tournaments. It's probably the time constraints
I
feel like there's a higher percentage of games.
Anyway, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I would say I think one of the fundamental differences is you don't have... There's a little bit more anonymity, whether or not you know the names or the emails, but there's a little distance that you don't have with that face-to-face thing, and you're really... whether or not it's true or actual or the reality, you have a lot of like you're dealing with people in like physically in your presence, and you need to you know you're going to be playing them again in maybe 3 hours. Yeah. And there's a psychological, physiological burden, emotional burden, that you're like, oh, I don't know what to do here. Maybe I'll just play it safe. Whereas if you're online, you can push it a lot more.
Yeah, that could be
probably. I mean, that's just my thought.
A guy to go for a two-way, et cetera.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But just from the perspective of, like, what works if you're trying to maximize your results in a tournament, I mean, part of the reason I think that's interesting is because the tournament philosophy is the same thing. You've still got this thing where there's a billion three-way draws, and there were. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of par. If you fail to get a three-way, that's not such a great result. Mm-hmm. And yet, the guys who won those tournaments usually did have, you know, two, three solos in seven games. Because they're often, you know, you often play seven games.
Oh, in the seven game, and that's
what I'm saying. I think that's interesting. Well, whereas in a face-to-face tournament, often, maybe there's one. But you don't see people walking away with multiple solos in a draw-based face-to-face tournament. No. Whereas you did see people walking away with multiple solos in a draw-based online tournament. Now, there's other stuff going on. There's probably a higher variation of player skill level when you're talking about a 300-player tournament.
We got to move off of draw-based, or this podcast is going to be 19 hours long. But I'll just say this. I remember from all the draw-based tournaments that it would be like, as soon as one person heard one dude soloed, all of a sudden it would cause this cascade of solos where people would be like, uh-oh, Nathan soloed. No, I'd better go try and solo. Like, people wouldn't really try unless they thought they had to.
But that is interesting, though, because that is people who are sort of acknowledging the tournament system and realizing the bar has just been raised. You know, someone just made that.
But that does happen.
Now it's worth it. Now it's worth it to try to risk a five-way to try and get a solo because
otherwise you're
out. Who cares if I get a five-way because I'm not going to win the tournament. Yeah.
Otherwise you're out.
All right.
So let's quickly do...
No one plays that stuff anymore, right?
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. And that's the thing. There are people that still do, and I really believe that... I do think it'll be back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe with a little bit more sophistication than
because
in the past.
Of this show.
No, not because. Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. All right. I don't want to be too quick about that, but I think that there's an. The reason it was so popular is it's so intuitive. It seems right. It aligns with the rules.
Yeah.
So I do think we'll see it again with a little bit more sophistication.
Memorial Day weekend. DixieCon.
Yeah,
it's still a primarily draw based tournament. That's the one that's.
And it's
been
the
same
I believe,
for
and I could be wrong with this, but it's the oldest tournament in the United States.
Plus, basketball.
And basketball.
And there's
it is North Carolina.
Yeah.
It is North Carolina. So what we talked about earlier next was lead-based systems. And that's like... Did we mix that up? No.
I don't know.
No, it doesn't matter. We talked about lead-based systems next. And, you know, it's a type of center-based... system.
We're going to talk about the thing that isn't Worlds next, right?
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah, there you go. Thanks for really just
voice
like,
of reason here,
sure. Like make, just like cutting through the program a little bit.
Yeah, no problem.
I was trying to be you know make it work, and you were just
Eric
hosting it.
Take
you're
the
very
red
welcome.
Pill.
So lead based systems. So how do you play a lead based system, and how do you maximize your potential in a lead based system? These are things like C Diplo. Like how have you? I mean, I know you've played in Europe. I've played in Europe.
Yeah.
Have you played in Europe, Aaron?
I have not played in Europe. I have played online tournaments with this system.
Oh, okay.
So
you're right.
Totally on Matt's team, as I recall, years ago.
Is that an online system? Is it Staverfu? Is that the one? It's a French system that you can find. It's actually a good online place to play diplomacy if you speak French. Hmm. Or if you don't.
I've played C Diplo in Europe twice.
Mm-hmm.
How about you? Twice?
Something like that.
Once in Germany and once in Paris.
You know what you should have done for this show? It's got someone who actually is any good at C Diplo.
Yeah, because I am straight up terrible at C Diplo.
Yeah.
I am really, really bad at it.
The thing about C Diplo, and we got into this just a tiny bit early on, is that vast, 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 far and away, the thing that matters most is, are you topping your board? I mean, so alliances are... I mean, no one really has allies in a C Diplo system. You have interests, and you have situations where... me and Eric can work together and advance our mutual interests, and we can help each other out, and we can both accomplish something. I don't care about you, and I'm going to stab you. And we know this going in.
The thing I always hear about those games is that they kind of reboot every season. Whatever nice thing you did for me last season is completely like everybody just stops, looks at the board, every season and goes, okay, what's going on now? Ooh, that's bad. My ally has one more than me. He's not my ally anymore.
Yeah, which is so I can't shift gears. I'm terrible at it. Like, I'm like, we had a thing and we were doing it and I was playing down this. I was playing the whole board. I was doing this thing and then I'm not in the lead.
Yeah. Although to be fair, I do think there's a little more to it than that. I mean, there can be situations where you and I can do a thing that advances both of our interests. It's just you have to look for that a little more. Mm-hmm. Like, the guy you want to ally with probably is not the guy who's your rival for topping the board. You know, if you're at 10, there's something to be said for trying to work with that guy at 5.
Sure.
Because right now, his goal isn't getting bigger than you. His goal is, say, climbing from 4th place into 3rd place.
Sure.
You can give him that without actually hurting yourself. That doesn't, you know... And so it's find the guy on the board that you can actually, like, both of you can actually gain at the same time.
Gain places.
Gain
places. Else's expense.
At the expense of the other 5 people. Which is always what you're doing, but the way you do it is very different. Because it's not just about, hey, both of us are going to grow and both of us are going to get big, and maybe I'm bigger and maybe you're bigger, but that's okay because we're on the same team.
Right.
That's not, it's not that. It's, mm-hmm. I do think you're right about the sort of rebooting every year to some extent, though, that you do have to look at the board and be willing to say, hey, the world has changed, and you know, I have to adapt.
And that's good. And, you know, and I think for a lot of our listeners, you're not going to run into this system very much in the U.S. Like we don't run it here.
No, but you still run. You don't run into this particular system, but you do run into things that I think are lead based systems.
Do you think like just the Carnage system?
I think the Carnage system, which used to be run at Carnage up in Vermont every year. I know it has been used at Tempest in D.C.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if they still use it, but they certainly
think they
used it
somewhere in Illinois.
Yeah, and so I mean that is a lead based system.
It's Origins.
I know people don't like to think of it that way, but the truth of the matter is that system is more similar to C Diplo than it is to say one of these draw based systems or to you know other things that you may encounter in the U.S. And so the way you play, I mean, if you pretend you're playing C Diplo, you will not be far off. I mean, that's probably what you should be doing.
And I want to give our listeners some advice here, but I don't know if we're very qualified to give advice here. Because I will straight up tell you, like, lead-based systems, especially when I played them in Europe, I've been very, very bad at them. And a lot of that has to do with Europeans not liking me. And let me be clear.
Yeah.
Bring an American approach to diplomacy, which they were not willing to.
All I'm saying is if you're going to wear a Mets hat and chew bubble gum at every diplomacy game, it's probably not going to work out.
Yeah, exactly. that's kind of what I did. And a little bit of it was, there were various reasons for it at the events. But I definitely was like, no, we're going to play America. It just got shut down so hard.
I think you may be selling yourself short there a little bit, though, because I think you probably do know what to do.
Well, maybe I know what to do, but I decided I was going to play, like, something different.
Right. So I
don't know what to do. And Lisa said, well, okay, this is an awesome little subset.
Yeah, no, okay, let's
like, we're all terrible at this.
No, I wanted to, that's just what I want to be clear for our listeners. Yeah. Like, we're trying to give them advice on what it is they should do in a lead-based system.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're saying, and I think only Matt has come together with a cohesive set of circumstances, look for... Don't ally with the next biggest guy. Realize that the people that are in like 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th, those are the people that you're going to be able to work with to do things. Think a little more laterally, and I think I want to be a part of something.
Although on that point, because I think it's a good point, what if you are 4th? Should you work with the guy who's 1st if he's offering you stuff?
Yeah, I think you should.
Okay.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I think probably you should. And there's actually some peripheral tournament stuff, and I know that this is deviating from the schedule a little bit. But I think there's a couple other peripheral tournament stuff that you actually have to think about, in particular in a lead-based system, that are maybe a little less critical. But to answer your question, yeah, I think you do. I mean, I think if you are a smaller power, what you are looking for is to... Any chance you have to move a rung up the ladder is important.
Because you have more rounds.
Well, you may or may not have more rounds. I realize one thing we should do, we've alluded to the Carnage system a couple of times, we haven't actually told anybody what it is yet.
I actually don't know what it is.
Basically,
it's actually extremely simple.
Yes, it is.
It's one of the simpler scoring systems you're likely to run across. Basically,
the guy in first place
gets something like 7,000 points or 700 points, or it doesn't really matter how many zeros you tack on at the end.
Which, he likes zeros.
Sure.
We'll say 7 million for Dave.
Sure. Yeah, basically the guy in first is getting 7, the guy in second is getting 6, the guy in third is getting 5.
etc., etc., etc. Then, once we've done that, we're going to give you some acknowledgement of the number of supply centers you have, but they're really just tiebreaker points.
So you no get number like of supply 7.12 right. for yes. 7 with
the, no number
for,
of supply
for the top
centers.
Or 12.
Exactly, yeah. No number of supply centers over the course of the weekend is going to make up the difference between finishing in 6th instead of 5th.
7.00012.
Exactly.
Okay.
So what you're really concerned about doing is moving rungs up that ladder.
Yeah.
If you're in 5th, you want to be in 4th. If you're in 3rd, you want to be in 2nd.
Okay.
And that's what you care about. And so it's not, because, and this I think is where it really different, really deviates from a pure centers-based system. In a centers-based system, what I really care about is just simply getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
In a lead-based system, I don't necessarily have to get bigger. I can improve, I can move those rungs up the ladder, either by getting bigger myself, or just by making the guys who are already bigger than me smaller.
Okay. There,
and that's very different.
That's a segue.
Yeah. And you just,
yeah.
If I can pull people down, if I can take Nathan centers and give them to some other dude, that might be perfectly fine, even mm-hmm. if I'm not getting them. I have to be conscious of who I'm giving them to, and I have to make sure that guy's not going to get out of hand. But if you can manage that, that might be a perfectly acceptable result. Whereas in a pure centers-based system, you might still do that for
yeah.
some reason, but it's not nearly as profitable
yeah.
to make that kind of, I mean, and to me, that's the main, you know, that's sort of where these things deviate. But you have to look at things like, how many rounds are we going to be playing here? What are the likely outcomes going to be? When we get to the end of the tournament, like the guy who wins, what is he likely to have? Is this a tournament where there's like lots and lots of players and lots
right.
and lots of boards where it's realistic that somebody might actually top the board every single round?
Yeah.
Or is this a smaller tournament where probably no one's going to be able to pull that off?
Yeah.
Because that matters, right? Because if no one's going to top every single game.
If you're at a little three-round tournament,
yeah, you know,
if some guy's going to get two big fat scores in a lead-based system, he's going to win the tournament anyway.
Well, it depends. In a smaller one, yeah, right.
Yeah.
In a smaller one, you know, if you finish first, second, that might be good enough. That might
yeah.
be good enough to win. If there's 10 boards every round and you're playing, you know, multiple round, whole bunch of rounds, that might not be good enough.
It's not going to be good enough,
right? It's probably not. You don't know,
yeah.
but it's probably not going to be good enough. And you have to think about that.
And that's
important basically when you're trying to figure out how many rungs up that ladder do I have to move
mm-hmm.
before I can say, okay, this is good enough, or what kind of risks am I willing to take?
Right.
Because, of course, obviously, any time I can get bigger at no risk to myself, you're always going to do that, no matter what the system is.
But basically what you're saying, which was the question that Eric posed, you want to move up rungs,
mm-hmm.
and there's an incentive for you
right.
if you are not topping to work with people that are higher up the rungs in order to push other people down.
Well, yeah, and I was saying that regarding like the C-Diplo type systems, but I suppose it applies to the lead-based systems too.
Well, no, C-Diplo is a lead-based system. I mean, yeah. I mean,
or to a center-based system, I should say, or a sum of squares-based system.
It might or it might not, and that it depends on the situation. I mean,
yeah.
It depends on the rules of the tournament.
But
it depends on a lot of other stuff that's involved. So that's a nice, as Eric was pointing out earlier,
yeah.
a nice segue into center-based systems, which are kind of our highlight, which is what Chicago and World Diplomacy Championship, or convention, depending on who you ask.
If you're asking me, it's a tournament.
It's a good thing you.
Oh my God!
You know what?
You know, sports racers. You did not see was Eric actually take one of his gloves off, throw it on the ground, and challenge me to a duel. So that's going to happen a little bit later.
Conventions, huh?
Yeah.
Do I have full ears on?
At WDC. At WDC, we're going to be playing a sum of squares system.
The C stands for tournament.
You know, it's at these times, listeners, that I wonder why I do this sometimes.
No,
he doesn't. No, I really don't. So, that's what we're going to focus on right now. How do we succeed at WDC?
Okay.
So, sum of square system.
Mm-hmm.
Eric, you've played this system twice now.
No, I've played it from that.
You've played this system three times now.
Whatever.
Played this system four times now.
Yeah, probably four.
Four times. You've been to Chicago four
times.
That's
about right. No, not Chicago.
But
some of
squares.
Some of squares.
Oh, okay. No, I
did it a bunch.
Oh, we did it this year because it's what we were going to do at
yeah.
Worlds. So how do we succeed at this system? That's what I want to know. Like, I clearly haven't.
Yeah.
You clearly have.
Some.
I want our listeners to know what to do.
Well, I keep going back to the bigger roar thing, but Here's what happens in these games where, like, the mistake that people always make, and then they go, what the heck? Why didn't I win this tournament? Or why didn't I finish in the top seven in this tournament? They play them too much like draw-based games. They pick an ally, they stick with that ally for all the game, a lot of the game. They go, well, okay, I know I'm supposed to top this board, but what the heck, you know, me and Matt, we're working together, we've been working together since the beginning of the game, we're doing good. I finish on 10, Matt finishes on 9, everybody else finishes on less, and both of us get kind of a crap score. And I mean, it's okay, like, I'm happy with my 10, I'd rather have it than not.
It's a fine score, it's a fine score, but it's
not a tournament-winning score. It's, yeah. I mean, depending, exactly, obviously, right, again, on the structure.
Right, but it's not a definitive huge score. Right.
It's not a, yeah. Yeah.
And
go ahead.
I was just saying, and just to refer back to your last segment, that right there, you've just explained the difference between this system and, say, Cdiplo.
Yeah.
Cdiplo, if you finish on 10 and I finish on 9, go you.
I'm absolutely
kicked my ass.
I'm thrilled.
You got way more points than me. You are in a much better position.
And if I did that, it's probably because I, like, stabbed you on the last turn.
Yeah, maybe,
or pretty frequently.
But that's probably what you did. But Matt's point, and I think it's really, really important to emphasize, that one center bump means so much more in a lead-based system than it does in a center-based system.
Yeah, it just
does. Like, it's huge.
Yeah.
that's a whole different, and, like, it's exponentially different.
Yeah.
Right.
So when you're playing Sum of Squares, you worry less about the differential than you do about the numbers of centers you have,
right,
and perhaps the differential.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess to sort of clarify that a little bit, I mean, in a more pure centers-based system, sort of set aside Sum of Squares specifically for just a second, in kind of a pure centers-based system, I know webdiplomacy.net has a little points thing they do that's kind of based on this detour, which we referred to earlier. It used to be based on this more than it is now, but it's still mostly based on this. Mostly what you care about is just how many dots you have.
Sure.
In the game. Get as many as you can. That's by far and away the defining characteristic. Sum of Squares does both. You're mostly concerned about the dots thing, although it turns out that actually, you know, being ahead of more people actually is pretty critically important.
Yeah.
Being in second is still much better than being in third, and it's not just because you have one center more. You know, so it's a little bit of a hybrid system, but I think you're right that it's still primarily it's the centers that are the issue.
Yeah.
More than anything else.
And the center differential.
And the center differential. I mean, I think really the mistake people make, and this is probably more or less the same thing as what you're saying, but what you really need to do to succeed in squares or in any centers-based system is push the game as far as you possibly can.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how well you're doing right now, no matter what your position on the board is, no matter how many centers you have, no matter how many people are smaller than you, if by playing one more year you can be beating these people by more, then you need to play that one more
year. There's no good reason that Italy's still sitting in Venice.
Yeah, I mean,
you should not end the game until you've got Venice, at least somebody does.
And you would never do this in a draw-based system. I mean, I just finished an online game this morning, coincidentally, where the game drew because I was confused about how the draw worked.
Mm. And so you didn't read the damn instructions.
But anyway, that's the point. where basically, you know, I could have taken a couple more centers on the last turn if I'd wanted to. I didn't bother, because in that world, it doesn't make any difference. Like, does it matter if I end on 14 or 16? It makes no difference. There's only three of us left alive. It's irrelevant. In a Sum of Squares system, if that's what I was doing, if I'm in that same position in Chicago, that would be stupid to end the game like that.
Yeah.
Because taking those last two centers is
right,
huge.
And I think that's part of it. It's like, you know, And I think a lot of our listeners know that, like, there are sometimes when a game gets to a point that is somewhat static, you kind of end the game. And one of the things that Sum of Squares does is kind of prolong it. Like, the idea, like, the proponents of the system are really saying, like, we promote more solos, which we haven't talked about this very much.
Yeah,
but, like,
well, that's
but
a
the promotion of solos is really when people are designing these systems, they're trying to find a way to get to Nirvana, to get to Solo.
Yeah.
You know, and so you see that a lot of the sort of like motivation for how these systems are constructed. We spent a lot of time figuring that out.
I would say this on that point. They may promote more solos, they may not. That particular system, the Sum of Squares system.
I'm just saying it's a motivation of the crafters of the system.
In my experience, I think maybe it doesn't, because I think maybe people get like, oh, I'm 15 and the next closest guy is 9. That's a huge score. That's fine. I don't even need to try for the solo. I'd rather just end the game.
Yeah, I mean, you may be right that it's not succeeding in its goal as much as it could. I mean, I think Nathan's right that was the goal. I mean, a lot of people, when they sit down to design these things, what they're doing is saying...
Awesome. I'm not saying it's good at it.
Right, yeah.
I'd say people solo about as often as they're supposed to solo. You know, and maybe a little less.
I mean,
that was quite a sigh. Yeah. That was Darth Vader was here.
Yeah, this is me trying to figure out how badly I want to derail this train.
Not too badly.
I mean, one of them, you know... One of the main critiques people have when they sort of sit down after an event and try to figure out, God, do I think this was a good system or a bad system, is they're trying to figure out, at least, maybe it's just me, they're trying to figure out how well does this system reward the things that you would do if the only thing you cared about was solo in the
book. Was winning.
Right. The reason a lot of people, myself included, bluntly, don't like pure draw-based systems is I do not think they reward behavior that it would encourage solos. I mean, in my experience, in the, you know, literally multiple times I've managed a solo board.
literally, like, two and a half.
More than one.
Yeah.
Less than five.
The way you do that is not by, like, eliminate a guy, then eliminate a guy, then eliminate a guy.
No.
It's not by draw whittling. I mean, that's not how you
get there. You will never, ever solo by draw whittling.
Right.
Whittling.
You don't get the game down to three people and then try to beat the other two, because... Those two guys are way the hell bigger than you.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. And that's why I don't like draw-based systems. With this one, I think their theory was, by encouraging people to just keep pushing, you encourage that behavior. And the one thing it doesn't have, which I think is great, is, I mean, those draw-based systems that we talked about earlier, there was a real disincentive for going for the solo, right? Because if I go for the solo and I screw it up, I turned my lovely three-way draw that would have kept me in the running into a crappy five-way draw that hosed me.
There's no downside to trying to get bigger.
There's no downside to this, and, you know, the downside is your tournament director is sitting up at 3:30 in the morning while somebody...
That's usually mad, for those of you listening at home.
So,
or me. We're actually talking about math.
So that sucks.
So, yeah.
But for the guy on the board, I mean, it's pure profit. I mean, there's no downside. I'm just going to keep pushing this thing, and
push it, right? Which is actually kind of fun, and is actually in line with, I think, what diplomacy is all about.
Yeah.
Push it.
Right.
Stop. Don't settle.
Right. Yeah. And maybe that right there. I mean, if there was one take-home message for just sort of the four corners of the scoring system sheet... It's don't settle for good enough.
There's one more point that I want to make on that.
It's a paper. It's got four corners.
See what I did there? There's one more point I want to make on that that it strikes me as related. There's not... Trying to get more solos is one thing that people try and encourage with the various scoring systems that they come up with. But some people are... There's one other thing that they try and encourage, and that's less boring stalemates. Draw-based makes lots of boring stalemates. That makes lots of, like, you actually have to know all 19 possible stalemate lines from...
Which will be an upcoming episode.
I like the way you're thinking. In my experience, people don't talk stalemate line almost ever in a Sum of Squares system.
Right.
It's like the 17th most important thing that anyone's thinking about, because they're so busy thinking about getting bigger, or, you know, like being bigger relative to everyone else. Who's got 9 dots? Who's got 6 dots? Who's got 3 dots? Nobody cares about the stalemates in those systems.
Until the very end, actually
somebody is on 17.
Right.
Or 16 or something, and he's about to win. That's when you start caring about stalemates. But, there's so much more cross-stalemate line play that happens in those, because you're just like, oh, well, I'm England and Moscow's way over there, but I could use that. you know, Moscow would help. Let's go over there. And then the people in the East are like, oh, yeah, that's fine. England's going to Moscow. It's no big deal. Whereas in, like, a draw-based system, people would be like, England's going to Moscow! Everybody freak out! You know, because then there's, like, some kind of a... We need to make
so it sounds like you're saying there's more fluidity, more acceptable
You talk to people across the stalemate,
less incentive to lock down
because nobody cares, like everybody's trying for the same thing, and therefore nobody cares about like the inevitable 18,
yeah, right,
because nobody's trying for the inevitable 18, they're trying for different relative to anyway. Right.
So let's sort of cabin down this conversation to like, and just to kind of get towards
your verb.
Cabin. Just like put it in a,
cabin.
A place. Be sorry. Cabin. Just to like smoosh us down. Let's tell people how they can win at Chicago and then stop talking.
Ally with me.
Okay, other than the obvious thing not to do.
That won't work.
That's not... Well, it does work sometimes. Temporarily.
Yeah.
No, but like, so given the scoring system, we've already told them, you're going to walk into WDC, and I want all of you to walk into WDC, whether you've played a tournament or not before. I want you to walk in with confidence, knowing that there's going to be people there that know who you are. It's going to be fine. I want you to walk in with confidence and get that piece of paper.
67 million listeners right now.
I know.
Every single one of them going to be at WDC.
It's going to be insane.
Yeah.
So get that piece of paper and figure out what the hell is going on, like we told you before. Like, make sure you do that. But, guys, how do I win at WADC?
You know, we haven't talked about that yet.
That's why I've really, as a question, segued into how do I win at WADC. Well played.
What we've talked about so far really is just how do you play in a sort of generic sum of squares system, not about anything unique to Chicago specifically.
I mean, that's why we're going to talk about it now.
Boys.
The like real tension on the set. Someone's gonna throw a punch. Okay,
so you have some.
There's a few things about the rules that I think are actually interesting. If you go to the Windy City Weasels website, they've got some information about the tournament up right. Well, they've got a lot of information about the tournament up right now. They've got a list of the scoring system. They've got a list of awards, things like that. I guess the one thing that jumped out at me maybe a year or so ago when Jim O'Kelly started talking about running this and was sort of talking about the kind of system he was going to use is he said, well, first thing he said was that they're going to play 5 rounds.
Which I applaud.
Which is more rounds than most people play. It's less rounds than we played in Vancouver.
Because I'm a freak.
But
I'm going to take full responsibility for that.
Iron Man.
No, seriously, you people. You cram as many rounds into an event as possible.
So five. Five is a good... I'm impressed with that, because usually four is the long version. It's usually three or four.
But
four
six is the hero version.
Six is we're trying to punish someone version.
No one has...
I played all 6 rounds, all I'm saying.
Welcome to Canada.
I also cried.
So the first thing they're doing is five
rounds. Unrelated.
Yeah. The first thing they're doing is five rounds, which is interesting, and I think that's got some stuff to get into. The real thing, though, is 2 drop rounds. You play 5 rounds, your best 3 count.
Yeah.
That's
bigger than people think.
Honestly, I think that it's kind of sketchy, but also really fascinating.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to... I mean, like, look. When do you do the drop rounds?
Right. I mean, I used to... And I don't know if you guys inherently have had an opinion about drop rounds versus not drop rounds in recent years.
I like them.
You like them. I think you don't like them.
I don't like them.
I used to hate them. I had... kind of a bad experience with drop rounds about 10 years ago, and it wasn't until a year or so ago that I started to reevaluate that and think maybe I like them. The bad experience, which I actually think is worth talking about, not just because you were on that board.
Oh, I can't wait to hear what this is. I
have no idea what this story is going to be. I love it. I'm actually interested. Yeah, Nathan probably doesn't even remember, because unlike me, he solos all the damn time.
Oh, yeah.
I made this tournament in Denver one year, and it was a 4-round tournament, and your best 3 scores counted. I don't remember the details of the scoring system. It didn't make that much difference. It was a heavily draw-based system where, so you know, the main thing you care about is how many people are in the draw. I think what year the game ended, was maybe the tiebreaker. Like, they didn't care how many centers you have. It was, like, how fast did you get the draw, which is an interesting little nuance that you don't see very often.
Yeah.
It's Sunday, so it's Sunday morning. I've played the first three games, and I've got three three-way draws, because we talked about this, that your games are all three-way draws, three-way, three-way, three-way.
That's pretty good.
So what's the problem with that when you get up Sunday morning?
Right. There's no reason to play.
Well, there's no reason to play unless you can do better than a three-way draw.
You go berserk and go, like, all or nothing somehow, but right. That can't actually be done.
What it encourages is really risky play, because basically, if I get a mediocre three-way, that's a lot like having slept in without, you know, the sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So you sort of sit down at this board, and I'm like, well, you may as well just push this thing as far as you can. This board also had another annoying component, which is sadly common because there's no way to get around it, which is that the Sunday rounds are sometimes a little shorter. Like, you've got this time limit on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, people have planes to catch, and they, you know, you can't play till 8 o'clock at night on a Sunday because the locals have to work.
So it's super hard to solo.
So it's that much harder to do it because you don't have time to get it done. So I sit down at this board. I think I'm Russia, and I think Nathan here is Turkey, or maybe it was the other way around, because it doesn't really matter.
Oh, this is when we switched Sev, and we did like a Sev-Ank switch.
I don't remember the details. What I remember is we both got enormous.
Yeah.
And I'm taking ridiculous risks, knowing I'm probably going to get stabbed, and this idiot's probably going to solo. But it was perfectly reasonable to do that, because if I play it safe, what do I get? I get the same damn result. I've had three rounds in a row, which is a lot like sleeping in.
Yeah.
So it encouraged this kind of ridiculous, I'm just going to, whatever, you know, I'm going to take sort of risks. I'm going to, you know, jam this fleet into the North Atlantic.
To be fair, your average player might not have gotten three three-ways in their first three rounds. There might have been an elimination sort of peppered in there somewhere just to...
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't winning. I mean, there were at least two or three people who were...
Oh, yeah,
no,
so you weren't winning.
No, I was
not.
No,
see, you're playing.
Yeah, I was not winning the tournament. I mean, there were... I think I was probably in third going into the round.
The obvious upside of a drop round is that you can just be like, lost.
We're getting to
eliminated.
That. We're getting to that.
Go on.
No, because I agree. I've come full circle, but... So anyway, I push this thing, and inevitably, of course, things get out of hand, and Nathan stabs me, and he gets 18 centers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that sucked, and I blocked out the details. the thing was...
Sorry, listeners, I'm kind of a jerk.
I wouldn't have played that way. I mean, if all four rounds countered, it would have been totally irrational to play that way, because that three-way would have actually been really valuable, and I would get a lot of points for it. With the drop round, it's not really worth that much on a Sunday morning if it's not better than what you've already done.
Because
really what you're concerned about is improving on your past performances every round, not just getting some more points.
Right.
But
all I'm saying is, looking at it from another perspective, if you get totally nuked your first two rounds, you still have incentive to come back and play a lot more diplomacy.
You do. That's one distinct upside. The other distinct upside is, I think, the drop rounds encourage people to try for exceptional results. They discourage you from trying for, I'd like a slightly above average result every round.
Yeah,
because slightly above average isn't good enough.
You look at that, and especially in like a big tournament environment, which Worlds is going to be, you look at that, you're just like, oh man, I don't know, like big three-way or like, you know, 12 centers.
Because the persons that get big results are not going to risk those results.
Mm-hmm.
But that's by playing more rounds.
Yeah, catch them.
Right?
No. They'll keep playing. I mean, there's no downside to playing more rounds in this system.
No.
There's no downside.
Two drop rounds just means two drop rounds.
Because we're still just adding. We're still just adding your.
No, I wasn't
together.
Clear.
I'm. You know, and I apologize. We actually probably should have started out by explaining in more detail how this thing.
Well,
works.
No, because seriously, if you're just adding everything up.
Yeah, that's all it's doing. I mean, your sort of normal, generic, vanilla tournament is you've got some scoring system. It doesn't matter what it is. You play the game, you get some points for that game. At the end of the weekend, we add all your points together and see what it adds up to.
And you just don't add up the lowest score.
Right, that's vanilla. Yeah, drop round means we're going to look at whatever your lowest score is, and assuming you played every round, we're going to look at what your lowest score is, and we're not going to count that one. We're going to count your three best, right? Or if you didn't play Saturday morning because you were hungover and didn't manage to make it in that day, that's your drop round because you got 0 points.
Right.
And so it's not sort of the philosophy of it. I mean, it has a number of virtues, like, you know, like Eric mentioned.
I guess there's one more that we should mention above all other things, especially in a World's tournament. We want lots of Europeans and Australians to come to our tournament, and if they happen to want to go see Chicago instead of play a round of diplomacy, they shouldn't be penalized for that. There's a lot of people that are traveling very far to be in a practical tournament, but that matters even in your Nazi tournament.
Although, I want people to play diplomacy. I know I'm ridiculous about it, and I'm stupid. And
I'm just saying. Even you had some allotment for like people.
I think
they've come all this way.
Yeah, in 2007 when we ran it, we allowed some drop rounds.
Two drop rounds.
Yeah,
out of six.
No. That's actually an interesting thing that's worth talking about. I don't know if you want to get into it today.
We're not going to get into it.
We did not use drop rounds. We did a different thing. The thing about the drop rounds, though, is that, I mean, we like to tell people, yeah, hey, the great thing is you can skip around and it doesn't really hurt you. The truth is, yeah, it does.
Of course it
really does hurt you.
Because it's the same as playing and getting eliminated, which might not have happened.
Right. I mean, you get a do-over. I mean, that's the thing. If you play this thing and you get killed, hey, I get to try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
If I didn't play at all, yeah, sure, that's the same as getting killed, but I also didn't have the chance of doing better.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like I didn't play that hand of poker. There's obviously an advantage to playing the hand, right? I mean,
do you win if you fold?
Good thing, well, that might be, poker might be the wrong example for this, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can only get these points if you sit down and play.
Yeah.
And so having more chances to play obviously improves your chances of getting good results, because only some subset of all your games are
good. All right, I'll amend my point a little bit. Right. If you happen to have slept through your alarm, you can always comfort yourself with the knowledge that you're at a drop round turn.
Absolutely.
So we focus a lot on this.
Yeah.
What else do we got for advice for Worlds? What are we doing? Like we've given them.
Well, we have to talk about the one last thing. We told them
about the drop rounds, so be aware of that. We've told them about how to play a center based system, sum of squares. We've told them.
You have more on that?
What else we got?
I feel like Matt's about to explode here.
Well, I mean, I think they're all wrapped. I think they're all wrapped together. I mean, you've got a top board you're trying to get onto. Actually, no. You know, let me step back for a second.
No, we should talk about the top board.
Yeah,
we should. But
step back.
Let's step back from that for just a second.
There are too many cooks in this kitchen, listeners.
Sorry, kitchen.
Go on.
One of the things about the rules, and we did this in Vancouver, but it didn't really make any difference just because of some other structural things about the tournament, is there's more than one thing you're competing for. There is a top board on Sunday morning. To get on that top board, you have to be, we're going to look at your best three scores from the first four rounds to get on that. The guy who wins the top board wins the tournament. However, the guy who wins the top board wins WDC.
Wins a tournament.
They do not win the tournament. To win the tournament, you actually have to have the highest score overall from your best three or five rounds, which means it's actually not at all unlikely that these are going to be two different people.
Right.
Which happened at our event. Now, in that particular occasion, it was the same guy who won both things, and there were some interesting structural reasons with the system that made it actually quite likely that it was going to be the same guy. I don't think that's the case here, and the reason it's not the case is because of the drop rounds. To get on the top board, how do I put this? To get on the top board...
Sorry, I distracted him.
It's such good stuff.
To get on it, you've only got the one drop round, right? I mean, the level of...
Yeah,
God, I should have rehearsed how I'm actually going to make this particular point.
You need three massive results at a big tournament out of four.
Probably so, right? I mean, look, I can look at it this way. Once you get through those first four rounds, you're going to have, like, the top 20 people. It's going to be a fairly even gradation, most likely. You've got somebody who got...
And the tiebreaker...
40 in the first round, 40 in the second round, 30 in the third round.
Yeah.
You've got some, you know, I mean, it's going to kind of go like that. You're going to have somebody who's 130, somebody who's 128, and have somebody who's 127. And you're going to go on down the list.
And the tiebreaker is going to be that one dot, that one Bulgaria that you probably should have taken off that guy.
Sure. Yeah. And that's fine. That, and, you know, and seven of these people get on the top board, and that's great. And they'll play Sunday morning on the top board. Here's the thing. Top boards don't produce particularly exceptional results. on
no, they don't.
I mean, you know, the odds are, if you got on that top board, you've already had three pretty strong results, right? Or else you wouldn't be here.
No, nine times out of ten, that's the first
right,
of seven.
Right, and so there's a really good chance that those seven people are all going to get, you know, kind of vanilla results in the Sunday morning. Because they're playing against really good people. You're not, I mean, there's exceptions to this, it happens, but you're not likely to see people getting 15 centers and having dominated the board on a top board. That doesn't happen. On the other hand, you've got a whole bunch of other boards going on at the same time. There's a good chance you're going to get a much stronger result on one of those boards someplace. And that makes it actually much more likely that somebody on one of those can actually leapfrog over other people. And I hate to belabor the drop rounds thing, but there's a particular reason, there's a mathematical reason why this is very important that we've not actually gotten into at all. And that's that there's a huge qualitative difference between getting 25 points in one, you know, 25 points your first two rounds and getting zero your first round and 50 your second round. I mean, you might say, hey, 25 and 25 is 50, right? After two rounds, you got 50 or you got 50. Who cares how you got them? Totally wrong.
Really?
Totally, 100% wrong.
Because the opportunity cost of,
no,
of a drop round?
That's not really it. Okay, suppose you've played your first three rounds.
All right, I'm lost then.
Right, here you go. Suppose you've played your first three rounds. You got, let's say you got 30 points each round. That's kind of like a bad top or maybe a decent second place. Each of those games. That's 90 points. I played three rounds. I got 45 the first two, which is a real strong, solid top. Oh, third round, God. I got eliminated.
You're totally right.
Going into that fourth round, we both got 90 points, right? But any point I get actually gets added to my score because we count my bench
drop one of my 30s.
All of a sudden, you have to drop a 30. If you don't get 30 points that first round, you may as well have been at the bar.
Damn you, Jim O'Kelly.
It makes no difference. That's the reason it's a huge, huge, huge deal because, yay, you got 30 points five rounds in a row. You don't count two of those.
It's so good. Yeah.
You would much rather play a more aggressive style where you go for bigger results at the risk of getting limited. I guess that's what I would say. I mean, because the thing about this whole discussion with scoring systems is it's not like you actually go to a tournament, you sit down and you say, God, should I ally with France or Germany? Let me check the scoring system.
Right.
Like, no one does that. 90% of the time, you're doing the same thing. You're looking for people to work with. You're trying to figure out ways to get dots. You're trying to find ways to grow, blah, 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 blah. But you come to crossroads in any game. You come to these crossroads for the game where you're saying,
especially if you're doing good.
Yeah, when you're doing good, where it's like, God, you know, I could stab my ally. I've got a chance here. It might work. It might not. Because you never know, right? I mean, if you know it's going to work, you're going to always do it.
Right.
It might work, it might not work. There's a risk involved. And you have to decide, is it worth the risk of doing this? And I think that's where these things come into play. I think with a system where there's a bunch of drop rounds, it makes a lot more sense to take the risk. Because, hey, if everything goes sideways and I get killed, I've got two. I can drop two of five scores.
And
that's huge.
And that, listeners, that's your advice.
What?
that is how you play the system. That is how you're going to win at Worlds.
I think Nathan's checked out of this podcast.
I'm not checking out. I'm just saying, like, we're going a little long, and we're moving on, and like,
we're
but
fine.
I think that's what you need to do.
All right. If you're done, you're done. I mean, we can't do the show without you.
Well, it's not what I'm saying. It's what I'm saying is, like, we've really conveyed to our listeners what we wanted to say. And as you pointed out earlier, I don't want to spend 19 hours on this.
Keep digging that hole, buddy.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying.
We have literally, like, 9 more hours worth of stuff.
No, we can talk about this a lot.
I got to be honest.
Yeah.
I hope anyone's still listening to this.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's good. It's all good. Mr. Shields has brought us a lot of information, and actually, honestly, and between you and me, and I'm it's unfortunate that we're on air, a lot more data than we usually have. He's like paper, he's like charts and stuff. It's nuts.
We
haven't
actually even started with this one yet. If you want to, like,
he's got more. No, no.
There's like more in the car.
Matt's wife is here, she's miserable.
She's like, no, get me now. Just let's be done with this.
Yeah, you're probably right.
No. But I do think our goal was to give out some valuable information about how
for
to
Worlds,
get
which you're all going to.
Yeah, definitely go to Worlds and
All 427 billion of you.
This is not just, you know, advice from the hip. This is, like, we've done this. We know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is how you want to do it. Mm-hmm. And seriously, Matt's not kidding. The drop rounds, big, the top board, it's going to incredibly change your game.
No,
I mean, I'm going to do that thing that I heard that you were supposed to do where you, like, involve your listeners. So we've told you a lot about how Worlds is going to work, and by the way, there's a bunch more on what, WindyCityWeasels.org?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure that we can post it.
There's like a ton more on the rules that we've sort of alluded to on this, but if you've got another tournament that you're going to that has different rules from that, which you certainly do if you're going to any other tournament, or if you've got a house game, or if you've got a club, or if you've got an online group, or
you had an experience and you want to know,
you're having trouble with, like, how do I adjust to the scoring system? We have a lot of ideas about this stuff, and there really is more to it than you might think that there is. The more I think about tournament diplomacy, and the more I think about just, like, the way that we evaluate non-solos, the more I realize, like,
there's so much.
And it's not just the math, it's not just the numbers.
Yes.
It's what do the other people at this table think about the numbers? Because that's right.
Fun about it.
Yeah, right. Look for people who don't understand it.
Or people that didn't pick up the paper.
Yeah.
Look for them.
There is that guy. There is that guy that says, well, we could just tie, and doesn't realize that what a terrible idea that is in a certain scoring system.
Like, yeah, totally. Yeah,
there's
that. Totally. Totally.
Interesting. Totally there.
I am totally happy to say totally.
Yeah. We're done. Matt Shields, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank God you were here.
Luxurious diplomacy cast.
Well, so yes. And not just that, you make us sound smart, which is nice.
Yeah. You're the wind beneath our wings, Matt Shields.
And there's a fountain in the lobby. So there's that.
Well, yeah, so welcome to the Executive Diplomacy Cast studio. It's excellent. Well, for Eric Mead, I'm Nathan Barnes.
What? How did you just do that? You could just do that? Fine. For Nathan Barnes, I'm Matt Shields. No. For Matt Shields, I'm Eric Mead. Thanks for listening.
Talk to you soon.